Okay. I've been told I have to introduce myself. So first of all, I want to say it's a great privilege to be able to be here today to speak to you, to all the parents and individuals with Duchenne and the care providers that are here. I feel very honored to be able to get a chance to talk. I should introduce myself. I'm a clinician scientist, pediatric neurologist at the University of Michigan, and one of my specialties and special areas of interest is Duchenne care. And what I'm going to talk to you guys about today is a new initiative that we're very excited about. And hopefully, through the course of this very short talk, I can provoke you guys into thinking a little bit more about some of the very basic things that we take for granted and how we might be able to alter or change those. So this is going to be a little different than the title on your little sheet, because when I was preparing the talk, this is what I thought ended up being the most important thing to potentially relay to you guys. So I wanted to start with a few key statements and generalizations. So as Pat mentioned, and this is a very wonderful thing, boys with Duchenne are doing better in basically all phases of their condition. They're walking longer, they're having fewer issues after they stop walking in terms of scoliosis, heart involvement, lung involvement, and happily they're living longer. This is obviously due to multiple different factors. Probably the best documented based in the medical literature is the use of glucocorticoid or steroid therapy. Though there's clearly other factors at play that are contributing to the fact that boys are living longer. And one of them is very likely the fact that care is better. Boys are being taken care of in multidisciplinary clinics by providers who are very knowledgeable about Duchenne. The suspicion is that this is helping or factoring into the fact that boys are doing better. We also know that there's significant variability in the clinical outcomes for individuals with Duchenne. The age at which ambulation is lost is highly variable. Ultimately, survival is also very highly variable, as well as some other issues as well. We don't completely understand the nature of this variability. It's clear that there are some intrinsic genetic factors that influence this variability. At present, these are factors that we cannot do anything about other than recognize. So, for example, there have been a couple studies now, most recently one identifying a gene called LTBP4 that influences the age at which ambulation is lost. Hopefully, this will be something that is a springboard for therapy, but it does point out that there are things that we, at this point, cannot control that influence how boys do with Duchenne. However, I think there are some things that we can control, and as the clinician, one of the things that I can control is the type of clinical care that I provide. And the suspicion is that there is quite a bit of variability between how different clinics provide clinical care. I'm going to borrow a little bit from the cystic fibrosis literature, which I'll get to at the very end of my talk, to talk about two general concepts when it comes to clinical care. So one is what we'd consider a shark fin distribution. So if we take all the boys with Duchenne and we think about at what age they lose their ability to walk, how their heart function is, and how long they ultimately live, if we looked at all the clinics across the country, the ideal model would be that basically all the boys are doing roughly the same. That would mean that likely we're doing the best we can from a care setting. Again, there's going to be some variables that we can't control that relate to factors like other gene modifiers. However, if this would be achieved, that we'd be seeing all the things really in a narrow window, we could probably assume that we're giving the best possible care that we can. The opposite would be what we'd consider the bell-shaped curve distribution, where if you think about a bell-shaped curve, you have on one end clinics that are providing the best care, in quotes, and in those clinics, the boys are doing the best. They're living the longest. They're having the best outcomes. On the opposite end, there's going to be some clinics that are not doing very well and having very poor outcomes, and then the big group in the middle are going to be providing average care. That might seem okay, but in my mind, that would be an unacceptable situation, because what we should have is everybody in that highest end. And the current assumption is that if we looked at all the clinics in the United States that provide care for Duchenne, we would be dealing with much more of this bell-shaped curve distribution. And therefore, I would postulate that there is room for improvement in terms of clinical care. So the goal, obviously, would be then to reduce or eliminate this clinical variability, and that care would be uniform such that the variability we see in patient outcomes are not determined by how we provide care for children. And this can be done in a couple of ways when you think about it. One would be to provide access for all individuals to standard care that would include what we could agree upon as being the things that are necessary for the best care for all patients. And with that would be acknowledging or recognizing what those factors are that represent the best care for patients. And just to put it simply, and I put this in bold because I thought this was an important point, and I think we'd all agree that what we want for every boy with Duchenne or Becker is the best possible outcome in terms of all the variables that we can think about. So the mission then is to develop a method of evaluating clinics that we can link to what clinics do and link those things that the clinics do to outcome measures, and in particular things that we know are sort of documentable data like loss of ambulation, pulmonary function, and survival. We want to identify the key clinical practices that influence these outcomes and then provide those that information back to clinics so that they all make sure that they're doing it. And we want to provide this information in a way that's very transparent so that families and patients can know which clinics are providing this information and this material and this clinical practice and which are not. So in other words, develop a mechanism whereby all clinics provide the best possible care that provides the best possible outcome. And that has led to what we'd call the TDCI, or the Transforming Duchenne Care Initiative. And this was actually something that was launched at last year's Parent Project meeting. It's a group of clinicians, care providers, parents, and patient advocates, all with, I guess we're a self-selected group, all with some recognized expertise in Duchenne care. And as I mentioned, we first met in 2012. There were representatives from 17 different clinics across the globe, but mainly across the U.S., as well as parents, representatives from the Muscular Dystrophy Association, and from the CDC. The goals of the TDC are a couple-fold. One is to provide access of information for all patients and families to information about what clinics provide. Another is to identify benchmarks that reflect best clinical practice and are associated with best outcomes. And to ultimately create a situation where we know what clinics should do and provide a way to see what clinics are doing it. So we've divided the TDCI effort into two phases. Phase one is relatively simple, which is to provide this information about what clinics are able to offer for all patients and families. And this may seem simple, but when we started this, there really wasn't a great resource so that you could find out, if you had Duchenne, what type of care was available in your area, and very specifically and in depth in terms of were cardiologists available, were pulmonologists available, and what was all in clinic versus as a referral base. We want to make this information as easily obtained as possible. This is being done through a collaboration with MDA and with Parent Project. And again, the goal is to have this information available to all patients and families. So we're making some progress in this phase of our effort. There is now information available really related only to the MDA-funded clinics on the MDA website, the Parent Project website, as well as Duchenne Connect. And soon there'll be information related not on the MDA sites, but on these other sites to non-MDA-funded clinics that also provide Duchenne care. And this information includes how you get in touch with the clinic, so the administrative contact, what services are provided, and this relates both to the specific MD or DO clinicians that are at the clinic, but also other services as well. So things like occupational therapy, physical therapy, social work, so that when you are looking into a clinic as a patient or family, you know what you're getting into in terms of what's going to be available at that clinic. So the second phase is what I would consider to be the most important phase, and it again will ultimately feed back to this first phase, which is to examine the baseline level of care administered in clinics. I think we all would like to anticipate or expect that regardless of what clinic we go to, we're getting the best possible care, and that clinic is doing what is considered by the field to be the standards of care. So the goal of this phase of the project is really to assess that, to see if clinics are applying what is currently considered to be the standard practice for Duchenne care, and then ultimately to relate this assessment to outcome measures to see, A, who's doing what, B, if what they're doing is what we'd consider the standard of care, and C, if that matches up to patient outcomes. So the specific steps related to this phase of the project include developing a survey to assess whether or not clinics are accessing standards of care, to pilot this clinic in several quote-unquote established Duchenne clinics, and these clinics have been selected based on some internal considerations, then broaden this to basically any clinic willing to participate that takes care of Duchenne patients, take the data that we gather from that and link it to outcome data, and then use that to establish clinical benchmarks that will be the measure upon which hopefully all clinics will be assessed in the future. And ultimately to have all this data to be transparent and publicly available so that patients and families will know what clinics are doing the standards of care and how that's affecting outcomes. So an important part of this is identifying the metrics we're going to use for evaluating clinics. We're focusing on six areas, and this from the title of the talk is the six areas of clinical care that we consider encompassing what is Duchenne care. And I've listed them, I don't need to read them to you, the six areas of care right here. And I've also listed the subgroup head in each of the situations. The TDCI group is a large group with a smaller group of committee chair people that are in charge of these different care areas. And we're establishing these metrics based on the published care guidelines for DMD, as well as expert clinical opinion. So the good news is that there are standards of care, or at least best practice, available now, and this is available to all clinicians, actually to all families and anybody. They're available on the Treat NMD website, also through MDA they're available, and they're available through the medical literature, so there's really no excuse to not have access to this as a clinician. It's a very large document, but it's been distilled into pretty easy bites. And we mentioned the clinical care areas in this document. This is how it's broken down. You probably can't read this. This is an incredibly busy slide, but I bring it up just to point out a few things. This idea of this ring of care for Duchenne that involves multiple different specialties, with each specialty analyzing specific areas related to Duchenne care, but then working together for the whole composite to provide the best care possible. So the metrics or the questions that we're pulling out to try to assess whether a clinic is providing the best care or providing standard of care come from these specific areas that have been outlined. This is another way of looking at it from the same document based on age of patient. So different things are required at different ages for the individual depending on the subspecialty. And so we're now at the phase where we're developing the TDCI survey. And the goal of this survey is to have a couple of very simple questions and topic areas from each of these broad care areas that will adequately and accurately assess whether or not a clinic is doing the standards of care. And again, the questions are based on the standard of care document with expert committee opinion. And ultimately, we're going to relate the answers to these questions to outcome measures. So here's where we are now. We had a group leader meeting in April 2013. We discussed potential survey questions in the group format and then identified a list of questions for each of the specific care areas. These were then refined based on discussions via phone and email in the subgroups. And now all of the questions have been submitted to Kathy Kinnett, Jerry Mendel, and myself to evaluate for coming up with the survey. And our hope is that the survey will be completed this summer and that the first surveys will be completed by pilot clinics by the end of this year. Not by 2103, that would be kind of cool. But, all right, so what are the barriers to having this completed? One is trying to figure out how accurate the data that we're going to gather is. A lot of it's going to be based on clinician assessment. We're trying to figure out a way in which we can fact check that because you might guess that if we're filling out a survey saying whether or not we're doing something, we might tend to either over or underestimate how much we do it. Another question is how do we account for variables that are difficult to control? So one thing that's been hotly debated is the use of steroids and how that might reflect on whether a clinic is doing the standards of care. So is it fair to assess a clinic based on the percent of patients in the clinic that are taking steroids? Given that it's a very highly personal decision and one that is made very carefully between the clinician and the families, and often isn't necessarily one that is a simple one to measure. Another question is, what do clinics stand to gain or lose by participating in this effort? So for example, if I'm a clinic director, my clinic is evaluated and I score quite low on this survey, would this have negative implications for me? And the final thing, and I think probably the most important thing, is figuring out how to link our survey assessing standard of care to outcomes. So it's one thing to say that a clinic is doing 20 different things that we think are important for a patient, but it's another to say that those are actually important and that we can measure it. Because as you know, more isn't necessarily always better. So why should we do this? Why should we go through this effort to evaluate this? And the reason is there is some suspicion that this is the kind of thing that can be simple and ultimately very, very helpful. And why do we think this? A lot of it's based on the model from cystic fibrosis, I think, and upon which the TDCI is basing a lot of its thoughts. So CF is another very well-known genetic disease that is relatively rare. It also has a foundation that helps support its clinics, similar to MDA. It's been shown, and this is somewhat similar again to DMD, that longevity with CF has improved greatly since these CF clinics were started. It's clear, however, that the longevity is only due in part to drug intervention and that actually implementation of care guidelines is a very significant factor. And this has been looked at very intensely in the CF clinics, where they've used outcome measures related to overlapping standard of cares to show that clinics that follow the standard of care have better outcome measures than those that don't. They've used, again, a six care area model, and they've defined best clinics based on their outcomes and then also correlated to how well they follow the standards of care. So this is really a model upon which we can gain some hope that doing a similar effort for Duchenne may have some benefit. I think it would be pretty wonderful to think that we can assess our clinics by doing something very simple as showing whether or not they're following standards, and that can have a very meaningful effect on outcome. It's one thing to go through a clinical trial and develop a drug, but it's another thing that if we can just simply modify the way that we're providing care to have a benefit for patients. So to summarize, variability in clinical care likely influences outcome. I shouldn't say it's a fact because it hasn't been documented yet, but if it exists, it's obviously unacceptable, and it's something that we can change. So the goals of the TDCI are to determine what elements of care are required for best outcomes and to figure out a way that we can get it so that all clinics are doing these standards of care. And the hope, as I was mentioning, in terms of bell shape versus shark fin, is that ultimately we'll evolve in a situation where DMD clinics are providing a shark fin type model, where basically outcomes in all clinics are relatively the same and are based on best clinical care practices. So I just want to conclude by thanking the people involved in the TDCI. I can't list all of the individual participants because there's several, but just in particular to thank Kathy Kinnett, who's been the driving force behind it. I also wanted to give a shout out to my U of M DMD clinic, and Kim Creamer in particular, who's going to be here at the meeting because she does a very wonderful job organizing what we think is a very top-notch clinic. But I guess we'll find out. I wanted to conclude by thanking all the patients and families. And thanks for your time.